Patrick Mulvaney, how does a guy who gets a degree in English and grows up in New York end up with one of the finest restaurants in Northern California? There's like seven questions in that one, but we'll just start there. How's that?
So after working in Europe, and we were working in New York, and then I went to Arizona, followed with a woman who is now an anthropologist at the Museum for Natural History. Phoenix, not as exciting as Manhattan to work in and as a cook. And started looking at academic options. And UC Davis and their food science program was there. I came up to talk to them about a degree in food science, a doctorate in food science. And they said, very nice that you read poetry. We do occasionally as well, but this is a real school. If you'd like to come here, we need chemistry. So I went back to ASU and got a second bachelor's in chemistry and came to graduate school. Now, when I got here, it was interesting but not engaging. And I think the one thing that professors and I agreed on was that I probably didn't belong there. But in the year that I spent in Sacramento, I just fell in love with the idea of all the farmers being right here, the 12-month growing season, getting to know who the farmers were. After the first year, I spent the summer in Napa Valley at Behringer Vineyards. Yeah, riding my bicycle to Behringer Vineyards, had Acme bread in my knapsack, going in the back door of Napa Valley Olive Oil Company, and said to myself, this is a life, right? I am a food guy, and food is my life. So at the end of the summer, when I thought about where I wanted to go, I realized that Sacramento was really a great place. That the size of the community, the way the community came together, made me decide that this is where I was going to come. So driving back from Napa, you know, that's when I came up with the name of the restaurant. So I knew that everyone in New York was going to bust my chops about Sacramento. What the hell is there? Tomatoes? You know, what are you doing? And so in the movie It's a Wonderful Life, Jimmy Stewart realizes a small town is where he should be. He runs down the street and says, Merry Christmas, you wonderful building and loan. So I knew that when I opened a restaurant, I would have Mulvaney's building and loan.
I just read that today. I've been to your restaurant numerous times. I've known about it forever. Did not know it was the Jimmy Stewart restaurant.
Yep.
Mulvaney's building and loan. So you have your own building and loan.
So, and sometimes people say, oh, is this intentional, you know?
Or did it used to be a building and loan or, you know?
No, yeah, my wife says that's the worst idea of all, right? A restaurant in a firehouse named after a bank.
Wrong.
But sometimes people ascribe more to it. There was a fellow outside for a wedding, and there were bells in the trees, mostly to keep birds from pooping on your table. And the bell rang, and he said, oh, that's cool.
Oh,
you have bells there.
The angels.
And his wife hits him on the shoulder and says, of course, you idiot, because every time
the bell rings,
an angel gets its wings.
Oh, see, just agree with that. Let's back up a minute. How many chefs have degrees in culinary science or the degrees that you have? I know some.
So everybody has. So, I mean, some of us do. We talked about a little bit with Anthony Bourdain passing.
Mm-hmm, yes.
That really, so he was 3 or 4 years older than me, but he, and I guess then I, am the first generation of people who went through school, had good upbringings, got to see a little bit of the world, and after college decided that cooking was what we wanted to do. And so when I started in 1985, as someone with a college degree, I was a rarity.
Mm-hmm.
College boy, weirdo in the kitchen, thinking, and everyone looking at you saying, you're just adventuring here, right? You're not really a cook.
This is just for fun for you.
This is just for fun because someday you're going to go back to what you perceive to be your real world.
Uh-huh.
But now, 30 years later, I think that it's a more likely path. I mean, my parents were not thrilled about me being a cook when I started. But I think now parents come into the restaurant and say, isn't this great? This is what my son wants to do.
Yes, yes.
And when I came back from Europe, the first woman I worked for, Leslie Revson, she was the first female chef at the Waldorf Astoria. I had a restaurant on the Upper West Side. And again, my parents were not thrilled. And my mother went in to lunch, and Leslie came out and said, hello, Mrs. Mulvaney. It's nice to have Patrick here. He's a nice boy. He's not a very good cook. But,
a nice boy.
But we like having him in the kitchen. And my mother said something to the effect of, it's just a phase. He's going to go back and become a teacher or a lawyer. And Leslie said, Eileen, I have a degree in art from McAllister College. Every day I do what I love with my heart and my hands and my head. And what more can we want for our children that they lead a fulfilled life like that? And my mother would repeat that frequently, so I know that's a quote. And in the time it took Leslie to say that, my mother went 180 degrees, and after that she was 100% behind restaurants. Yep.
Correct me if I have this right. I was told by someone the definition of a chef is, and maybe the degree is a part of that, that you know the kitchen and the business side of a restaurant. Is that the definition of a chef?
Chef.
Someone's a cook, but you're Chef Patrick. So
chef is the chief, right? So who's ever in charge of the kitchen?
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily. I happen to be in charge of the whole restaurant. You can be either part. Lots of people call me chef, but it really comes because I'm not good at names. And my father was a lawyer, and as we'd walk around Queens Boulevard in New York, he would say, "Counselor, good afternoon. Counselor, good afternoon."
I'd say, Pop,
who's that? I don't know.
Counselor?
Pop, who's that? Counselor, I don't know. Like, well, how do you know he's a lawyer? Because he's wearing a cheap suit, and it's not the first time, so I know he's not a defendant. And so as it became to a place where I started meeting more people, I started to default into calling everyone chef. And then everyone started calling me chef back because everywhere I go, right, that's
just
the first word that comes out of my mind. Yeah.
I love it. Talk about, we have to talk about Farm to Fork. I hope that it never gets to be a cliche. You've kind of been here since, for, you know, 30 years. You saw it.
Yeah, so we came 25 years ago, and I saw, right, that there were farmers out here, and it was a conversation. For me, it was a fascination, right, with everything that's here. And then over the years, to see how the conversation has changed, right, that now what was once me and a farmer on the back of a pickup truck looking at vegetables is now bankers and doctors at UC Davis and politicians.
Is that
and
good or bad?
I think it's great, right? Because now mm-hmm. everybody has come to our conversation. We had Sean Harrison from Soilborne Farms. Dan Kennedy was the publisher of the Business Journal mm-hmm. and did, before he retired, he said, "I want to do a fundraiser for you." And it was a different scale of fundraiser. Sean was used to $25 potlucks, and here was something
big
where people
lights.
Were coming
yeah.
with big checks. And Sean, inside, a great speaker and someone I hate speaking after in the world, but he was shaking and white and nervous. I said, "Sean, what's wrong?" He said, I "Look at all these people. I've never been here." And I said, "How cool is this, Sean? Look at this. There's doctors, there's lawyers. The conversation that you and I have been having for 5 years is now bringing everyone else to the table.
Love
How
it.
Cool is that?" And then the idea, you know, we talked about it too, that is Farm to Fork just marketing. And sometimes we kind of shied away from that a little, right? We didn't know what to say. So now when people say Farm to Fork is marketing, I say, hell yes, and it's brilliant,
yeah.
right? And in addition to that, without that Farm to Fork, would there be 15 acres of urban farmland in West Sacramento? Would
right.
soil-borne farms have gone from 2 to 65 acres? Would Food Literacy Center be doing everything they're doing? Would you know that 98% of the sushi rice used in America is grown within 20
here,
miles?
Right?
Right? So all these, there are all these other spinoffs, right?
Yes.
And then all these other jobs. And two, as a restaurateur, maybe it's that college kid, right? There's probably still a little chip on my shoulder. Over 10% of the people who work in California work in hospitality. Hmm. We're a big part of the
yes,
economy.
Yes.
And sometimes I think we're not as recognized as we should be. So I love the idea that Farm to Fork recognizes not only the farmers and the workers out there, but
the
also the people in the restaurants.
So there was, I've talked to farmers who have, younger farmers who have sadly said, "I'm going to sell this when this becomes mine and grow exactly one crop of condominiums because
yep.
my family loved doing this and getting up at 2 a.m. and living and dying by the heat and the frost and the bugs. And I want to flip that to being a restaurateur." It gets crazy sometimes. It's not, it's not the glamorous thing that we perceive.
I've never perceived farming as glamorous. Right?
Well, not yet. But I guess my point is
But the romance, right?
You have to love what you do in restauranting and in farming. You really have to love it, don't you?
So I think that if you, yes, and this is what I tell people when they bring in, so we have a lot of kids who come in and work with us when they're in high school.
I love it.
Their parents say, "I want to do that." And they say, now they say it is, "I'm going to scare them back into college." So we have a kid who started when he was 12. We have pictures of it. Maybe he's too young, but he was cutting a big deer up, and now he's a sophomore at Cal Poly.
Love it.
Right? And what it did was just show him little responsibility and how you work, and he got to see what we were doing and what we work. So we say about restaurants, and I guess the same is true for farming, you have to try the life. And if the life is for you, then you'll never have to work. But if it's just a job, then you're going to be stuck and miserable.
What do you remember your first thing as a kid or a teenager cooking or baking or making as a little
I think my baby? Mother got me for Christmas one year a
please say an Easy Bake Oven.
No, because that would have been above my mother's skill level. So she was a horrible cook. A peanuts calendar / cookbook. And I remember making pizza dough, going and getting yeast and making pizza. And the first time I think I used canned sauce, and then Mrs. Indelicato next door was just appalled that we were using canned sauce. So she taught me how to make a regular tomato sauce to put on top and bake it in the oven. But it was always an adventure, right? And it was always something that you, and by adventure, I mean it's something that you don't necessarily know the outcome, right? You have to be comfortable starting, not knowing where you're going. So my dad used to have pig roasts for his clients. And remember the first time we put on a pig, my dad didn't know how to cook either. And all he remembered was that his mother scored the ham. So he scored the outside of the pig, which was pretty fatty. And as boys, we thought if a small fire was good, a big fire was better.
Of course.
And so we put the pig on, the big fire, and I went inside to wash my hands and looked outside, and half the crabapple tree in the backyard was on fire. But we learned a great lesson that day, which is that the black char that comes in the first 5 minutes of cooking a pig too hot goes away by the time it's done.
There you go. There you go. So I love to cook. I'm not at any caliber, but I've been told I can put a good table together. But the joy I feel putting food in front of people I love and people enjoying it, there's nothing like it. My kids call me a food pusher, but guess what? They're at my house at least twice a week, if not more.
Getting a fix.
Exactly. Well, you know, really, it's such a problem that you're here again. They were there last night. Talk to me. I think that's the same with you. It's just the joy of presenting something and people enjoying it. Is there much better than that?
And that's what we do, right?
Yes.
And we say to people that we talk about welcome, right? And we hope that's the first thing that you hear when you come in the restaurant, and we hope that that's the way that you feel when you leave after an experience with us. Mm. And though sometimes I'm not that good with words, right? Someone asked why I got into cooking and said, because I like girls, I'm not good at sports or music, so I needed to do something. But it's our way to show our expression of love, right? And to get to do that. And further, too, it's for us, it's rewarding, because what happens is that when you put people at a table and put bread in front of them, they break bread, that it changes the tenor of conversations, right? So over the last dozen years, we've seen conversations take place in the restaurant and been part of conversations in the restaurant that have changed the way our city works.
I love it. We're going to jump around, but you just said you love women. How did you meet the girl, Bobbin Mulvaney, who is an amazing, amazing woman? How did you meet the girl,
So I invited her to a pig roast. So after we used to have pig roasts ourselves, right?
Why not? That's a way to impress a girl.
And so she was so impressed. She was at the convention center, and she looked at me, and I don't think she said this, but it was clear in her eyes that she was saying that the parole bus is outside and the kitchen is down that way. I'm not sure which one you belong in, but you don't belong here.
Go somewhere.
And then and then 3 weeks later, we met at a State of the City speech at the convention center. She wasn't wearing glasses. I was wearing a suit and had my hair combed. She came up and said, "Hi, can I find you a seat?" And then with an utter disgust, saying, "Patrick? Oh." But anyway, after that, she started stalking me, and the rest is history.
Uh-huh. And will she concur the stalking?
And she will not concur, you will never hear my wife deny anything or characterize anything I just said as untrue.
Okay, so we'll take it for what it is. No, you are a power couple in the most amazing way. And how long have you been married?
10 years on Thursday.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. So when a friend of mine's a massage therapist, and when he comes home and someone wants a back rub, he says, "Hell no."
Yeah,
my brother-in-law is an architect, and his house is not finished, and it's been 30 years in Napa. When you come home, do you cook for your wife at home? Hell no. Yeah, you would.
Well, we have chickens in the back, so we'll make the occasional egg.
Uh-huh.
But most of our eating at home comes out of brown boxes that come from the restaurant.
So in a roundabout way, you cook, but not
in the
kitchen.
Not, yeah. So our refrigerator home is populated mostly by champagne, mustard, and cigars.
That does not cigars in the refrigerator. I obviously
sometimes
know.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I have another. A few things I found out about you that I'm so impressed by. A few years ago, you discovered the issue, or made it more clear to you, the issue of food waste.
Mm-hmm.
And it did not sit well with you.
No, and we talked about it. It was started by Jesse Fink, who started Priceline.com. And he, after he retired, he said to me, he'd already had this report. We were in Washington, D.C., and he said, "I was looking around for something. Someone brought the idea to my attention that 40% of everything that's grown doesn't go into someone's bellies.
40%
of everything that's grown in America." He said it struck me that it was just like Priceline. We had an unused commodity, which originally was airline seats. Now it's food. And we had an audience, potential customers or people who would buy the food. And how did we the algorithm in the middle is how we brought them together, and that was what their effort was with that. And so we spent a lot of time in D.C. I've been back to a couple of times to walk the halls and mm-hmm. talk with people. And I remember the first time a friend of mine, Murad, from San Francisco, said, "Why are we here?" I said, "Chef, think about it. That's what we do, right? What we don't make money on the steak from the middle of the cow. We make money on the stock and the sauce and the chucks that get ground into beef. And, you know, we make money by using everything, right? You know, by when we get carrots in from Full Belly Farms, we save the tops and use those tops to make spetzel or make ravioli outsides, mm-hmm. right? And it's by utilizing everything that it gets better. And so it's been cool to have that conversation with clients as well. And then this year, the James Beard Bootcamp alumni for policy change and public advocacy, they asked us, a bunch of us, 100 of us or so, to send in recipes. And so they have a cookbook with 110 recipes of things that normally would get thrown out in the kitchen.
I need
and
that.
How
That's
you use them.
Awesome.
And it's available at the restaurant.
That's fantastic. I'm going. Speaking of your restaurant, Bobbin and I were having lunch at your restaurant, and I don't know how it came up, but I must have just asked her point blank, you know, heads together. I said, is the restaurant business as competitive as people think it is, say, just here in downtown Sacramento? And she surprised me with her answer, and I loved it. She said, when someone gets what's the sticker when something goes bad with the restaurant?
A health
thing. She says, you would be surprised how quickly everybody's staff gets over there and makes it right. And I said, what? She goes, absolutely. Everybody pulls together and gets that restaurant open and running again. And I was so pleased and surprised to hear about it. Talk about...
Yeah, the Sacramento community has always been very good to us. When we started, we were in a kitchen that it turns out wasn't actually really a kitchen. And there was a time, and it was a day where we had a party for 600. And so the health department came and made it clear again that we were not in a real kitchen. The produce delivery guy was dropping off food while Thomas was inside, the health inspector, and so we were going over how this was going to work in his drives around. So within an hour after Thomas leaving, I got a phone call from Paul and Glenn Atapas saying, we're not open for lunch. You can have our restaurant from 1 to 2 every afternoon. Rick from Waterboy saying, Saturday night at 11 to Tuesday morning at 10, my restaurant is yours. Sonia at Trace Hermana saying, we have all this space back here. Huge ovens, please come and let us know.
How does that make you feel?
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so for us, you know, that's always, for me, the best part, right, of mm-hmm. Sacramento, right, is how people come together and help each other in times like that. In the restaurant community, we do that for sure. Now, we all, for sure, compete, right? And sometimes we're competing for...
Competition is good.
Yeah, I don't know that it's necessarily that we're angry or jealous of customers and stuff, but sure, we all want to do our best. And if someone was going to open a restaurant close to us and they said, do you mind that we're opening a restaurant? I said, Bob and I put our money down on a bet that we could open a restaurant, provide hospitality, and people would come. If you open a restaurant that does that better or draws business away, then it's not my job to be angry at them and want them to go away. It's my job to say, how do I make myself better so that this is where people want to come? And I think that's the cool thing, right, is that it makes us all be better.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Keeps you on your toes.
Mm-hmm.
So of all, from your Charlie Brown pizza to where you are today, what's your go-to favorite food? When you can eat whatever you want, how do you choose? Right, it's like choosing between children. But do you
right,
have
and it's whatever comes in, right?
Yeah.
Whatever's standing in front of me, right? And so, in the summer, if I'm at Twin Peaks and I get to pick one of those peaches where the juice dribbles down to my elbow, right? Or the tomatoes when they're finally good. You know, I love like cherries in the beginning of the season, but I always go to the farmer's market. And I know they're not ready yet, and I eat, and I'll buy some cherries and eat them and be unhappy. But I know that 3 weeks from now, they're going to be fresh and ready, right? Because they come out right before they're set. But the truth is that, you know, when you want to sit down and have something, what I really want most is just to sit across the table from my wife and share a quiet dinner.
She was right. You're cool. she speaks nothing but good about you.
She also says that we can only do that by going to other cities because my husband works in the room wherever he goes.
So speaking of traveling the world, do you have a favorite foodie city? Sacramento will always be the best as far as, you know, the restaurants here. But where is a restaurant that you love in the world?
So we love to eat wherever we go.
Yes.
We were in Santa Fe last year. It was great. And obviously I love going home to New York. And there's a place called Mandicotti's in Long Island City with Ida's older Italian woman who cooks and just loves me, and her food is just filled with heart, and there's nothing we love more than going there. But in terms of regular foodie cities, we go to Denver a lot.
Really?
And the change, and to see how Denver has grown up over the last 15 years probably that we've been going, parallels in some ways what Sacramento has been.
I was going to say, in your time here, it's about the time I've been here. What a difference.
And what a difference it is. So that we can go to, and we went to Denver the first time, and it had an okay experience, but not great. When we went back 6 months later for business, and our favorite hotel, Bob and the concierge came up and said, "Mr. Mulvaney, my name's Vito. Since you've been here in April, three new restaurants have opened that you need to try. I've made reservations at all three for 8:30 tonight. Please tell me which two I should cancel."
Oh, my gosh.
And so now to see from that just a few few restaurants to this big burgeoning restaurant scene, to where they had Slow Food Nations, right, where this year I was lucky enough to be there and cook on a food waste dinner, so a zero food waste.
Awesome.
So a weekend of festivals, they took all the leftovers and went down into a kitchen underneath, and we all cooked and made dishes for a potluck, family-style meal.
And it was delicious.
Out in the middle of Larimer Street. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And so it was pretty cool. So, and again, the thing that I love about Denver is their sense of family, right? Their sense of community that they have with chefs, which is much like what we have here in Sacramento.
What else is on Patrick Mulvaney's to-do list?
Keep my wife happy is always a challenge, right?
And God, all you men out there, pay attention. Focus.
And then, you know what? We've been working a lot on mental health in the hospitality industry.
That's
There's
awesome.
A bunch of people that died by suicide in the last year here in Sacramento on too much, right? And then I was invited back to James Beard boot camp to speak as a guest lecturer for the Farm Bill. And we went, and it was the day that Bourdain passed. So we spent the weekend talking about it, and I didn't spend any really time talking about it, but we had already had plans to have a gathering of chefs and owners to talk about what we could do when we came back. And at the end of the weekend, when you put up your little, "This is what I'm going to do after being energized here," I said, "I'm going to find out about mental health first aid." And everybody, all the other chefs said, "Why didn't you tell me?" The Beard Foundation said, "What is the matter with you? Why haven't you talked to us about this?" So we've gone forward, and I think that all sorts of help from Kaiser and WellSpace and Steinberg Institute and VSP had us at their Innovation Learning Network conference here in town. They had 100 innovation officers from healthcare systems around the world sit down to crowdsource a solution to deliver healthcare better to restaurant workers.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and so it was pretty neat. And the program they came up with is called I Got Your Back, and it's peer counseling in the restaurant. So someone will have a purple hand that says, that lets you know as an employee that this is a safe person to talk to if you're having trouble. And also that person will be empowered by owners to say, "Hey, I see you're having a tough time. Do you want to talk about it?" And then also providing a web-based portal so the people in the restaurant business will have resources available to them so you can see where to go.
I will tell you, I read Anthony Bourdain's book either right around when he was passing, when he passed, ironically, and just reading about the characters in there and now talking to someone like you, he goes deep into the very unique people who call a restaurant kitchen their home. And so what you're doing just by reading one book from the deep inners of a kitchen, I see the...
Well, it's the family, right?
Yeah,
For us, and I think that maybe, you know, if I think about myself, right, going to college, and this was not the expected path, right? And yet, I decided, you have to decide for yourself that what you do in your life has value. And so we did, and when Anthony Bourdain's book came out in the restaurant I was at, all 14 people read the book. Certainly the first book some of them had ever read, certainly the first hardcover book any of them had ever purchased. But it all spoke to the idea of, you know, what he said, we're pirates, but that we belong to a community that does things that are valuable and we value ourselves regardless of how we may think or do see that the outside world views us. And that validation was just super important. And so when he passed, it was really crushing, right, for a lot of us in the restaurant business.
So sad.
But two, for people all around, I was surprised by how many non-restaurant people seemed affected as well.
Well, yeah.
And we sat down. So that Beard Foundation, the next Tuesday, we had our first meeting already planned. Kaiser, mm-hmm. Wellspace, Steinberg Institute, National Council for Behavioral Health, all in the room to talk to 15 restaurateurs about what mental health is, how we can adjust better. Yeah. And at one point, someone said, you know, with Bourdain and then Kate Spade and even Robin Williams, at some point you say they had everything. Why did they do that? And I looked at him and I said, no one's asked me that. In the restaurant business, we all know why. We face failure every day. And fortunately for me, it's not something that comes to this point. But every day we face failure, and sometimes it's not going to be good enough. So none of my friends in Sacramento or around the country or those 15 chefs in upstate New York, none of them ever said why. Mm. We said we're angry, we're surprised, we're pissed.
But why? Yeah.
Yeah, but we know why. That's the purpose of mental health.
That's fantastic. I had not heard about that. As we close, sir, what are you most proud of?
My wife and kids, right? Mm. Seeing how
the smile on your face.
Yeah. But seeing how we've done pretty well in a good town. Sacramento's been very, very good to us, and maybe we've been able to bring a little sunshine into the city.
Yeah, just a little bit at least.
Yeah.
Thanks for what you do, and I hope you stick around.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks, Patrick.
Appreciate it.